Blog Talk Radio.
Change Your Life Radio, helping you move towards greater happiness, health, and abundance with your host, Lucinda Curran.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Change Your Life Radio. I am Lucinda Curran, Chinese medicine practitioner, building biologist and author, and today I have the pleasure of introducing you to Louise Tice. So Louise was looking for treatments for allergies, intolerances and sensitivities to chemicals, and she talked to numerous conventional and integrative doctors. Not being able to find anyone that could suggest anything that worked, she actually went looking overseas and came across the protocol provocation neutralization in the US and the UK. After trying the protocol in the UK, it took another 3 years to get things operational here, and since then she's been successfully treating children and adults in the testing and treatment of allergies, intolerances and chemical sensitivities for the last 6 years. So hello and welcome, Louise.
Hi, Lucinda. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, just before we get going with talking about your amazing work, we just need to let people know that you're not a doctor.
Yes, that's exactly right. I just want people to understand that any of my discussions are personal information that I've gleaned over the years, and it certainly isn't to replace medical advice. And if they have any questions regarding medical diagnosis or treatment, they really should be directed to a medical practitioner who will be able to assist them.
That's fantastic, and it's a good reminder for people because I think a lot of people really like self-diagnosis as well. So just checking in with your medical practitioner is really good for ruling things out and getting the guidance. So let's start with the questions. Could you tell us more about allergies and intolerances, please?
Look, it's really interesting. Allergies and intolerances. Allergies are really, I suppose you could call them, adverse reactions of your body to a number of substances. So that might be inhaled, and that is dust, pollens, mold, animal dander, and even chemicals, foods, peanuts, shellfish, eggs, and chemical compounds such as gluten or MSG, and chemicals on their own, such as chlorine or even medications, which is kind of scary sometimes. The clinical reactions to allergies and intolerances may be triggered, may have a trigger of one or more, such as headaches, migraine, cognitive dysfunction, mood, behavioural dysfunction, energy depletion, tiredness, sleep disturbance, hay fever, mouth ulcers, eczema, hives, asthma, achy joints, like some of my patients who are actually tested by my nurses have achy joints. You can even have an irritable bowel. And cravings, and anecdotally, weight excess. So it's really a loss of optimal incidence in your life. So basically, allergies by the Australian Society of Clinical Immunology and Allergy indicate that there is an incidence of, and wait for it, 33%. Of patients suffering with allergies. 10% have the really awful anaphylaxis, 20% with rhinitis, dermatitis is about 20%, asthma 10%, and hives about 7%. So it's really quite big. In another one, the ASICA Access Economics in 2007, a bit old, but gives you an indication that 19.6% of the population had at least one allergic response. So that, for instance, allergic rhinitis or hay fever, 2 out of 5 adults, asthma, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 10 with adults, eczema, 1 in 6 between the age of 6 and 7. What's really interesting was a survey in 2011. It seems like yesterday, but it's a bit of a while ago, where they actually found that 10% of 3,000 children had allergies on an IgE-mediated skin prick test to eggs, cow's milk and peanuts. They actually expected 1%. And they actually anticipate that over the last 10 years there's been a fivefold increase. So it's really a difficult proposition. As I've already suggested, with allergies, the triggers are allergens, dust, mold, pollen, grass, dairy, egg, nut, shellfish. But it's sometimes... Some integrative doctors look at it as a total body load, so that what you'll have is allergens, intolerances, stress and infections. So it you know, sometimes the doctors need to look a little beyond really the obvious.
That's so fascinating. And so really what I'm hearing is we've basically got about a third of our population having some sort of allergy.
That's exactly right. And I haven't even gone into intolerances. But I'll bore you and keep talking, if I may, and just say that some of the clinical responses are acute. So acute anaphylaxis and acute asthma, and some are often delayed reactions such as eczema, chronic rhinitis, and other bits and pieces. Now, the standard approach, which is great, that's put forward by the allergists and works quite well, that they look at IgE antibody tests. And they do that through skin prick tests. And I'm sure everybody's had a skin prick test, or at least quite a few of us. And another way that they test it, and it's really quite interesting, they've really come up with some really clinically relevant data, and that is through the blood test, and they are the RAST test. So... sometimes another approach might be to have a food diary, but I suspect that integrative doctors may apply that approach, perhaps more than allergists, but of course, never say never. I'm sure there are some allergists out there who take food diaries and they're really quite experts on that. Treatments. Well, with conditions of anaphylaxis, asthma, allergic rhinitis and eczema, often cortisone, or with the horrendous anaphylaxis, you've got the EpiPen. And often with asthma, you have a Preventer. In acute episodes, you might have some cortisone, but of course, I'm not an expert and would recommend patients with these type of approaches to seek medical advice. Another way to go that is often explored by immunologists is desensitization. So that can be done in the doctor's surgery. It's obviously made up by the immunologist, who says, here, go to your GP, and he will inject increasing amounts of a particular allergen in an attempt to desensitize you. So sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't work. Other approaches are that you just simply exclude what the problem is. So, you know, that's why in hospitals they actually say, are you allergic to something? And they put a little red band or whatever colour it is with the items that you may be allergic to. Another approach is a mast cell stabilizer, Rhinochrome Intel and Nalchrome, which I don't have the statistics on, but anybody can have a look at that and see whether that fits in with how they want to look at dealing with it. So I'll just perhaps, if that's okay, turn to intolerances, because that's really something that is a bit different. And it was Dr. Lobley who at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney, who really identified, as far as I'm aware, in Australia, and really took seriously the issues in relation to intolerances. So there aren't any, unlike allergies, there aren't any formal surveys undertaken as to the prevalence, but there's a kind of guesstimate of about 15% of people suffering from intolerances. So this can be to individual food items. So you may be intolerant to dairy. But with dairy, it's kind of interesting because you may actually lack the enzyme to break down dairy products, in which case the protocol that I'll sort of mention to you really can't put an enzyme back into your gut. So, you know, obviously with people. So that's one thing. But other people might be not lacking this, but may nevertheless be reacting to it by way of a food intolerance. Other kind of intolerances are naturally occurring substances, but once again, like where you're missing an enzyme such as lactose intolerance, we cannot, with the protocol, treat celiac, because that's a totally different approach, and is not really an intolerance. It's more, from what I understand, and once again, I'm not a doctor, it's an immune problem. So, you know, the doctors out there, they're the ones to go and have a chat and focus on first thing around. But other people have found that they're intolerant to, for instance, and there's lots of discussions about salicylates, amines, MSG preservatives and tasting agents, or artificial additives, sodium benzoates, sulfites, colouring agents, blah, 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 that are in commercially prepared food. So intolerances, if you're eating a substance, there really is, it's made up of lots of food chemicals, obviously not the artificial additives or anything, but it's made up of different aspects of, you know, parts of salicylates, amines, natural MSG, and all the rest of it. So it really is naturally occurring substances. So the aim would be to actually look at the diagnosis of triggers in relation to intolerances, and not dissimilar to allergies, and it all gets terribly confusing. You can have an acute reaction, or more particularly, you might have a delayed reaction to a food substance. So that if you eat something in particular, you just say, well, I wonder what that was. But you don't necessarily relate it to that particular substance. So what then happens is it's really difficult to actually identify things. Now, some of the intolerance tests And these are not me saying that they may not be useful, but just discussion with doctors and just having a look at different approaches, so that the IgG, Alcat, Nate haven't got a really good reliability. So from my personal perspective, and that's merely my personal perspective, I'd suggest that they perhaps were not particularly reliable. Personally, I've actually gone out and spent lots of money, not with Nate, but with the other IgG and the Alcat, and came back and went, really? Is this what you're telling me? And it didn't really reflect precisely how I was, but of course that's me. It's not everybody, but the doctors have indicated to me that it is poor reliability. But as I mentioned, Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, Dr. Lobley has the exclusion and challenge, which really for intolerances is the gold standard of diagnosis of intolerances. So what are the triggers for intolerances? Well, they can be enormous number, and they might cover headaches, migraines, a lot of migraines, mood and behavioural dysfunction, sleep disturbance, stuffy nose, hives even. Sometimes with some of the people that my nurses test, it's IBS type issues, so it's all over the place. And it's people just get, what can I do? So with exclusion and challenge, I understand that it can take up to 4 to 6 weeks to exclude a particular to exclude foods. And with the exclusion and challenge, because the reaction can be delayed, you really need to be off them for quite some time. And anecdotally, I've heard from some people that it was very time-consuming and emotionally demanding. Like, mums are amazingly persistent, but even sometimes they find it really difficult to meet the needs of their children whilst this exclusion and challenge process goes forward. But what is good about it is that patients need to be committed, and let's face it, it's low cost, because to exclude something is not really going to cost anything. But the only problem is that if you find you're sensitive after the exclusion and challenge to a number of nutrients or a number of foods, you sort of look at it and go, well, you know, am I going to be nutritionally reduced in my exposure? And that was sort of part of my issue. The wonderful allergists sort of gave me the experience, said, you're doing, and I can remember one in particular who was very positive and said, well, you're doing marvellously at excluding. And I appreciated that those kind words, but I sort of looked at it and thought, isn't there something else I can do? So, you know, that's it. But certainly I'd sort of recommend that if people are interested in the elimination diet, to go to the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, or you know, go search for it and see whether that suits what you need. So I suppose what I'll come and talk about now, and that is to turn to why I think, and that's from a personal perspective and the perspective of a number of my patients. Nothing is 100%, of course, but I, as you mentioned in the beginning, I searched the world for another approach because I personally had done a great job of excluding, but when it came to I really don't know that I want to live like this, I thought, what else is there? So that's when I went on my search. But I do appreciate the really kind and positive reinforcement of the allergists, but unfortunately for me, that it really was kindness, but it didn't really give me an outcome. So that's why I went on my search.
Louise, before you keep going, could you just share a little bit about your journey, please?
I look back now and say, well, yes, I must have had food intolerances. And but you know, lots of people do. And then I had issues with mold, which it was unfortunate, but it's just one of those things that happened. And I found that I became more reactive. So lots of people find that sometimes with mold exposures, you know, who knows what they are, that they're really not happy Vegemites after it. So that's sort of the impetus of my search.
Thank you, because I think it really helps people to understand that, you know, personally you've been through this, and I know you said that you really hit the point where it's like you don't want to keep living like this. It's just not, you know, not good for you.
No, I was more concerned from a personal perspective with, as the doctor suggested, I was doing well at exclusion. And the thought came into my mind, okay, am I excluding so much that I'm not getting sufficient nutrients from all of my foods? And that was really a thought-provoking moment. I serendipitously came across a yoga magazine that talked about provocation neutralisation, and I thought, wow, this sounds amazing. And it was over in the US, so I went and trotted over to the US and didn't quite meet my needs. So there was a fantastic allergist here whom I had chatted with before I went, who had said, hey, why not go to the UK? And I really appreciate his support and that's exactly what I did. And that's where I really found a fantastic approach. It is different to the US approach. It's nevertheless provocation neutralisation, but it's it's very much a smaller number of people that get tested, and it's always tested by registered nurses who are supervised by doctors. And of course, where I work, that's precisely how we work. So what it seems to do, and on my website I've got studies which indicate that it's as reliable in diagnosing as exclusion and challenge. So it's not me saying it, it's what the study has said. It's really prompt, so it does what it says it does. So it provokes and then you serially dilute. No, it's not homeopathic. I'm not a homeopath, but I've had homeopathics, and this is really different. So it provokes and neutralises, for want of a better word. If you look at somebody being tested, it kind of sometimes it's similar to a skin prick test, and you create a wheel, so it's done with specific allergens. Such as potato or tomato or whatever. We will look at the nurse will look at the wheel and that's been created, and will serially dilute until it has calmed down and is as good as the one that we use as a normal isotonic normal saline in a as a norm, as it were. So what we've found is that exclusion isn't required, and I think that's what is really beneficial with the approach. So that and that's certainly my experience and the experience of quite a number of the people who have come to the clinic, so that you don't necessarily have to exclude. And it's not like the challenge of the exclusion and challenge in the exclusion and challenge gold standard, because we don't actually challenge, we will neutralise, which is a different approach. So if, for instance, you're having a really bad reaction, our approach is to ameliorate that reaction through serial dilution. But because I've taken on the UK model, which is three patients to one nurse, nurses are fantastic, but they're it's not exactly a cheap option. So it's just one of those things. So I think I can say that the reason that I like it is that on the whole, and nothing ever is 100%, exclusion is not always required. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you might need to build up the body through the education of treatment. So essentially, what we seem to find is that people will come and test for 3 days. We end up with a prescription, and it's a personalised approach, so it's not something that anybody else can take. So it's not, for instance, going to the pharmacy and buying some antihistamine. It's very much personalised, as the website indicates, and it's compounded after the doctor signs the script and sends it to Australian Custom Pharmaceuticals. With children, I think this is a real positive benefit. Children are tested with sublingual drops, so they're not threatened by needles, so they can either have drops 3 times a day as a treatment, or they can have a metered spray 3 times a day, but adults can take a small, and it really is a small, teeny-weeny needle. It's an insulin needle, and they take it once a day. So, it's kind of, well, I think it's kind of cool, but that's from my personal perspective.
You've been listening to the first part of the two-part series about allergies and intolerances and with a different approach to testing and treatment, with me speaking to Louise Tice.
Thank you for listening to Change Your Life Radio with Lucinda Curran. You can follow us on Blog Talk Radio simply by clicking the button at the top of the show. For more information, head on over to changeyourliferadio.com.au.